Fruit.
Bugs, no eat fruit.
I realize that we are related plants, both bamboos, in fact, and our shared physiology is the only reason I can have a conversation with any complexity. The hedge along the river is too small to have many sentient roots. The presence of other snow vines triggers an aggressive growth, but this hedge has lived alone and is content to lead a manicured little life, parasitizing its aspens and putting down more guard roots than it needs, thus serving the humans without realizing it. It has no need for intelligence, none at all.
Change sap for bugs,
I repeat, hoping that repetition will of itself prove persuasive.
Big animals eat bugs.
Bugs no eat fruit.
Big animals eat bugs.
Big animals eat bugs.
The snow vine repeats. I have made progress. Yes, I say. Change sap for bugs.
Big animals eat bugs.
Yes, change sap for bugs. Like this.
Bugs eat sap.
It says,
bugs are pests.
Bugs are good. Big animals eat bugs like fruit. The snow vine stammers some meaningless chemical compounds and finally says,
bugs are like fruit.
This is very significant progress. Bugs are like fruit. I agree. Bugs eat sap. Change sap. Sap will control two animals.
Sap will control bugs. Big animals eat bugs.
Yes, you must change sap for bugs and animals.
I will change sap for bugs and animals.
At last. Yes, change sap like this. I deliver some prototype chemicals. All these plants. Long ago I behaved no differently from them. We grew together. We braved the storms, we suffered in droughts, we traded remedies for pests, we kept out dangerous corals and root-eating animals, we bargained for sunlight and nutrients, we timed our flowerings to share pollinators, and we staggered the ripening of our fruit to maintain seed-dispersing animals. We spoke simply because thinking requires energy. And the strongest among us could survive well enough almost without thought because our lives were simple. I have grown, but they have not, and my needs run in tandem to theirs in ways they could never imagine. Only intelligent creatures also create civilization. Civilization creates the idea of peace as well as war, and makes both possible. I am a pacifist. I have chosen the idea that I intend to make real. The sun rises. I am weary after a busy night. Sunshine sends photons, and in my leaves they split water into oxygen, hydrogen ions, and energy. I am large. I will renew myself as efficiently as possible because we face even more difficult times in the campaign to domesticate the glassmakers. Marie comes to the meeting house. Her skin color is too yellowish. I wish she were able to eat more because food would give her strength. Exactly what chemicals are you making? She asks. Something related to morphine, and it should have a strong, depressive, and hypnotic effect on the glassmaker's central nervous system, as I understand it. Also barbiturates, to depress brain function.
Dangerous combination.
Dangerous because they produce strong reactions. Their effects may be cumulative. The goal is to disable them. We have seen that they are willing to kill. She sits.
We can't control how much they ingest, though. Overdoses could cause respiratory failure.
Correct. I have thought of an additional concern. Females and majors eat first and eat to their contentment. Workers may get none. We must review Orion's plan of attack. We may need to physically subdue the workers. Subdue almost sounds peaceful, my humor root interjects. She nods.
We'll need to plan for injuries as well as overdoses. We'll probably lose some. I don't even know how their circulatory system works, just that they have one.
I will supply antidotes for my drugs.
We don't know how they'll work without tests, and we can't do tests.
Correct. Much will rely on the skill of the medics. She leans back, closing her eyes and letting sunshine fall on her face. The warmth of sunlight feels pleasant to animals.
Lucille's good,
she says eventually.
She'll have us ready.
She opens her eyes to look at my talking stem. She has proven to be a wise choice, I say, and your efforts are vital. You have done incalculably much for Pax already. Perhaps I should mention to her that after spending a night talking to plants, I am more acutely aware of why I am so pleased to have intelligent company. Humans have made my life happy. I wish they lived longer. I avoid thinking about what might happen if my plan fails. I am large. Humans are fragile. They might all be killed, but I would survive in one form or another despite anything the glassmakers might do to me, and I would be desolate beyond imagination.
Lucille. When Steveland got the plans to start drugging the glassmakers, there was a fantastic party at their camp across the river for a day and a half. At first, the stupefiers made the glassmakers silly and loud, with lots of yelling and singing and stumbling around. Then they argued and started fights, and glassmakers got tossed bleeding into the river. At least one drowned. Bats even brought food to Monty to ask him what was going on. The drumming got off beat. It had to be scary for any glassmaker who could still think straight. I kept pretending to be cheerful and optimistic, trying to balance the medics and Steveland, who worried about all sorts of details. Cedar saw setbacks every half hour, eating too much, eating too little, too aggressive, too sleepy, too much optimism on my part, too much pessimism, always some damn thing. Finally, on the second day toward sunset, the glassmakers began to pass out. The females and majors collapsed over dinner, and when the workers saw them sleeping, they scurried to eat the leftovers, and pretty soon they fell face down into the feeding bowls. That was our sign. We sneaked out of the city by the back gate, threw a rope bridge across the river at a ravine downstream, and crept up the riverside road toward the glassmaker camp. The old hunters led, and Cedar, of course. Marie hiked right ahead of me, stooped under a backpack, and when she tripped on something in the dark, glass bottles full of antidotes clinked. It had to weigh a lot, but I couldn't help her carry it since we wouldn't stay together. I carried nothing, especially not weapons. They might fall into the wrong hands if... Well, it wasn't my job to think about failure. Hathor had already done that thoroughly. She was too old to fight herself, and stayed safe and sound back in the city. I'd been too nervous to eat all day. The 100 of us creeping toward their camp accounted for most of the able-bodied adults and older children of Pax. Another 50 hid on the other side of the river, ready to cross it in boats as soon as they could. There was more than one of us for every one of them. We'd win. They'd lose. But with how much damage? Paralytics. That's what was in the food tonight, Mary had told everyone before we set out. Overdoses aren't just possible. They're inevitable. They also might choke on the food in their bowls and drown in the soup. Check the breathing, first of all. We couldn't carry lanterns, so we couldn't see what was ahead, and it was cloudy, so we didn't even have starlight or auroras. But we could hear a lot of whiny snarls. Snoring, Marie whispered. Peter stifled a laugh. He'd painted his face with big gray eyes and a vertical stripe across his mouth and nose to look like a glassmaker. Camouflage, he said.
Listen, he said. Everything's quiet.
Right. Nothing barked or sang or sparkled in the night. Lizards eat vegetables, Marie said. I wanted to ask if this would hurt them, but that question would have to wait. We were close to the camp, silent with fear, straining to hear. The old hunters and the best fighters had arrived at the camp ahead of us. No big noise. Translation. No big trouble, probably, but I couldn't see a thing, so I didn't know. A bark, like a bluebird, called to us from the underbrush. One woof. Good. It was a sign that things were fine. We kept creeping forward.
Woof!
Again. But then a glassmaker moaned far ahead. Something fell. A bowstring twanged, probably to deliver a tranquilizer-tipped arrow, and humans whispered angrily. Peter gasped and held his breath. I kept creeping. We knew they wouldn't all be asleep. Some of them would have eaten too little, or wouldn't be as susceptible. But how many awake? Why wasn't anyone yelling anything? That many overdoses? Something else thudded. Something crunched like a basket being crushed. What? Should I bow-wow a question?
Woof!
Came from just ahead. Then a lot of whispers and a big thump like a tent falling down. In a few more steps, we turned a bend in the path, and we found Orion with a bow over his shoulder, holding up a flickering red lantern, and a woman was leaning over a motionless glassmaker, listening to its breathing and untying weapon belts. Farther ahead, a purple lamp with a tiny flame glowed, and vague shadows hurried around. Someone to my left imitated a bluebird whine perfectly, a call for a medic. Marie hurried toward the sound. I kept looking for my field commander. There, his amber lantern. The old hunter gestured thumbs up, everything woofy, then pointed to a female slumped on a mat. Mind check, to strip of everything I could, including clothes. Lamplight reflected on her gray eye. The eye twitched. A good sign, really. She was awake, probably fine, just incapacitated. I thought she'd smell bad close up, but she didn't. More like ripening truffle and bitter cloves. And not strong at all. She must have bathed recently. I took off her blanket, soft and fluffy, and folded several times, bigger than I thought, and really warm. The next morning, I half-helped, half-shoved her onto a raft and across the river. I felt small next to the females. Their heads were almost as high as mine, but their bodies were lots bigger, bulky and long, balanced over spindly legs. Marie said a lot of thorax space was devoted to lungs and hollow bones, so we weighed about the same. The drugs turned out to be a little too strong, as we expected. We lost 5 majors and 9 workers to respiratory failure. Two more glassmakers got injured and died when they struggled, and four died of injuries from drugged fights before they passed out. Our side took a few hurts, too, including a hunter who accidentally shot himself with a tranquilizer arrow. A glassmaker child stayed in a coma for a whole terrifying day, and most glassmakers woke up nauseated, throwing up, and panicky. A few got hysterical, including gray eyes. Steveland got morose. A toll of 20% is excessive. I committed a major misjudgment and caused a needless slaughter, a repeat of the depraved history of my species. I have so badly betrayed the glassmakers that they will never accept mutualism, etc. I asked the committee for permission to talk to him alone. The counselor medic gave me a questioning look, but spoke in favor, and the motion passed, with Steveland abstaining. I didn't know why he abstained, but it didn't matter. So everyone left the meeting house. I shut and barred the door, sat down in front of Steveland's stem, pulled out the knife, and started talking. Nice weapon, right? I got this from Tatiana. She got it from Sylvia. I have never seen it before. It is metal. Steel, from Earth. It's a secret. It's the knife Sylvia used to kill the old moderator, Vera. You know that story? Well, I mean the real story. Everyone says Sylvia's revolt was just a vote. They say the moderator got voted out, the first and only time that's happened. Well, that's not what happened. Sylvia wanted to come here to Rainbow City, but the moderator didn't, and the parents didn't, and she finally had to kill the moderator. With this knife. Other people got hurt and killed, too. Sylvia even left some parents back in the old village, because they didn't want to come here. They were afraid of you. He didn't say anything. He was probably shocked, giftless. That was kind of what I'd hoped for. Sylvia gave the knife to Tatiana, and she gave it to me, so I would know that being moderator isn't a game. It isn't easy. It isn't fun. We're not Fippocats, happy and gentle and everything. Well, maybe we are. Cats can kill if they have to. They can kick something to death like little lions. We can make mistakes, but we can do the right thing, too, even when it's a terrible thing to do. The hard part is knowing what to do. The parents were afraid to come. You're the one always saying how big and powerful you are. You can be frightening. I did not mean to be frightening. Don't worry. It was their job to know when not to be scared. I wanted you to come too much, perhaps. We're glad we did. I never knew until now that she had to kill people to get the colony to move. That's not what they teach in school, is it? I did everything I could to get Sylvia to return. I wanted a colony of service animals here. I did not wish to make her kill. That would be highly, highly uncivilized. She decided to kill Vera. You didn't. And you tried not to kill glassmakers. And mostly, you didn't. I visited the old village and the big history tour for kids. We walked around on stilts and pretended we were earthlings, and we studied the old storm cellars and the barrens where snow vines grew. It wasn't a great place to live. Sylvia did what she had to do. So did you. We can make mistakes, but you didn't. Sure, some of them died, but you know what slaughter is, and it wasn't slaughter. There were more deaths than I expected. More deaths than you hoped for. Balance these words. Expect and hope. He was quiet for a while. The difference is emotion. Exactly. But feelings aren't facts. I picked up the knife. I'm here to give this to you. Where can I put it? Plants do not have personal possessions. Moderators do. After a while, when he saw that I wasn't going to change my mind, he decided to have me put it in a glass box, like an artifact at the museum, then bury it under a floor tile in the meeting house. He said he would weigh more feelings against facts. And he must have, because soon he began directing autopsies of glassmakers. I will learn from my error, for if I can do great harm, I can do great good. The glassmakers will see the difference between conflict and mutualism, etc. again. Nye and Kung organized elaborate funeral ceremonies, burying the glassmakers in the cemetery grove in full view of the surviving glassmakers.
So they see we won't eat them, Nye said.
Marie had said Nye had never given up on the glassmakers. We put the females and children on our side of the river, under a wide, open tent alongside the city wall, next to a bamboo grove with lots of eyes and ears. The majors and workers went on the far side in an open corral, eating food laced with tranquilizers that didn't calm them down nearly enough. They moved like they were sleepwalking. They also sleep-hit each other, kicked, scuffled, and brawled, not to overlook the sleep attempts to attack the guards. We took the females off tranquilizers because everyone on the mission, Cedar included, thought the females had leadership roles and were a lot more reasonable than plaid blanket. Well, they were. They didn't hit each other. They just yelled a lot, really loud. They didn't threaten us. They ignored us in an arrogant and superior way. We started taking females on tours of the city. Well, actually, we had to plead with them and half-drag them to get them to come. I started calling them queens. I'd found that word in an old Earth book. It meant women who rule arrogantly and act superior. Queens. On the fourth day of Operation Domesticate, I wanted to lead a tour for the gray-eyed one and another that we called Bologna because she bellowed so much. She was a bit bigger than Gray Eyes, with a faint striped pattern in her brown fur. A warm morning breeze flapped the tent, and the guards waved at me. Chaku! I called. Good morning! Let's go! The children jumped and ran away to huddle next to the grove. The queens didn't move. Gray Eyes was sitting on a mat. I took her tough-skinned hand and tugged gently, keeping my fingers away from her claws. Come on! It will be fun. We'll even give you dinner. At first, she ignored me, but finally she stood up. I gave her hand to Peter, who often came with me on tours along with some guards. He was Tatiana's grandson, 16 years old, but his real job was to run and get more help if we needed it. Bologna took a few steps back as I approached and said something unfriendly. You haven't seen our city, I said. Well, your city, too. I took her hand and didn't let her snatch it back. You know, we're not going to hurt you. Cuck, cuck. Time to go. I tugged. I tugged harder. Another queen said something, and they had a brief, hostile exchange. Then Bologna started moving. We began hiking toward the gate, and two guards fell behind us. Bologna took a couple of quick steps just to show that she could elude all of us if she tried, but when we entered the walls, she stopped dead and stared. Hey, it's beautiful, I said. I told you. Come on, we'll show you more. The kids had put signs and glass made on buildings to welcome them. Clinic, meeting house, gift center, bathhouse, dining house, glassmaker, museum. But the queens didn't seem to notice. Gray Eyes occasionally grumbled at Bologna, and Bologna grumbled back. No reaction, until finally they took deep sniffs in the kitchen. Deer crab stew with onions. It smelled great, and I had the cooks give each of them a bowl of it, which they gobbled down, and when they were done, Bologna threw the bowl on the ground. She had reacted. So, I thought, silly me, because Gray Eyes had visited the city already, she might not be impressed, but this was Bologna's first time, and we had her attention. She'd like the museum. We went there and I opened the door. It's full of bits of machinery, old dishes, a steel cup, scraps of fabric, and other artifacts that are pretty amazing. Best of all, There's a diorama of the ruined city in one of the bays of the building, and in another bay, there's a gallery of the 24 ceramic portraits of glassmakers from the cemetery, everything labeled in glassmade as well as pacifist. Bellona would see that they were honored, and they were our friends, or at least that they could be our friends. We walked in, footsteps echoing, and I pointed out the diorama and gallery with all the enthusiasm that I'd use for teaching a class of small children. We're especially proud of these. They couldn't understand, but it was the noise and gesture that counted. This was your city, and it can be your city again. She didn't care. I don't think she looked at anything. With those faces that never move, who could know? I decided to skip Harry's gallery a few buildings down, another tribute to the glassmakers. She wouldn't care, and besides, children and cats were waiting to dance for them. Our message couldn't be clearer. We want to be your friends, so get domesticated. And their answer was clear. Drop dead. But as I watched the kids and cats sing and waltz around, I thought about looking at things from the Queen's point of view. After everything that had happened, the attack and deaths and now having to live naked in a cold tent, Grey Eyes probably hated my guts. The kids and cats finished the show for Grey Eyes and Bellona, a great performance, with some amazing acrobatics. All us pacifists applauded and cheered. The queens could have been statues. A solemn-faced little boy brought them necklaces of flowers and said in his best imitation of glassmaid, "Kong Wei! Kong Wei!" We slipped them around the queen's necks. Later, at a committee meeting in the meeting house, I said, Grey Eyes sniffed the flowers, roses, really fragrant, and Bellona said something like, "Rot, rot, 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 rot," and that was all we got out of them, which was pretty much nothing. I took them back to the tent. Then the queens all started yelling at each other.
"They were reviewing the visit," Bartholomew said. "They don't agree on their interpretations of events."
He spent most of his time at the tent, observing and ready to communicate if they wanted to try, which they didn't.
"I think Bellona has an especially divergent opinion."
"Not domesticating very fast," Cedar said. "I separated the workers and majors this morning into different corrals. We thought that would help."
"It helped, Kung said. "Less fights, more fair fights, and the same ones fight, same ones against others, certain others."
"Right. There are sides," Cedar said, and then imitated Bartholomew. "Divergent opinions, especially plaid blanket. But what would you expect?" "Then let's separate them some more," I said. "The different factions of majors, like that." "Sure," she said. "Get me people to build corrals. But everyone's working the fields, and they should be, because we have fields to tend. We don't have enough people to make this work."
"It will take time," Stevelin said, "but the rewards will be great."
"How long? We're not as slow as plants." Stevelin answered after a pause. He'd been pausing a lot lately, probably thinking, the way Tatiana used to.
"Intelligence makes predictions difficult, but there is only one intelligent outcome."
"There are a lot of stupid outcomes," she said.
"By acting intelligently, we limit the opportunities for stupidity, like pruning a tree to direct its growth."
"I need a lot more pruners if we're going to make this work," Cedar said. Some beadies nodded. After a pause, Stevelin answered,
"I suggest hobbling those glassmakers inclined to fight to limit their ability to walk and kick, perhaps by tying back legs together."
"They'll untie it," she said.
"Glue the knot."
Cedar flushed. I guess she didn't want to be outthought by Steveland, and I knew I needed to keep the meeting moving. If she didn't like Operation Domesticate, fine. We all have opinions. But she was starting to remind me of a queen. "We'll get the leather workers on this," I said.
They have some tough old hides and glue. Flora, can you work with them?
You need to know, Cedar said, that it's going to storm tomorrow. They're going to be out there in the rain. They won't like it.
They get hobbles. They cooperate. They get a roof,
Kung said.
I can build roofs, thatch roofs, separate ones, and we separate them quick that way. Behave, stay dry.
Offering rewards for good behavior will be a major step toward domestication, Stevelin said, and Kung grinned. The medics and I have concluded that they communicate by scent, using various volatile chemicals and pheromones. This explains the relative poverty of their spoken language. During the autopsies, we discovered that their olfactory organs are enormous, and they have significant scent creation and diffusion glands. Their sensory abilities far exceed yours and mine, which is why you have not noticed these smells, and I must grow more sensitive organs quickly. We must analyze and learn their chemical language.
Maybe there's a slapping language, too, I said, hoping people would laugh.
They did. Violence is a form of communication among animals, although your abilities to communicate render violence too crude for routine social relationships.
They don't have as many rules, Bartholomew said.
They might just be nasty by nature, Cedar said.
Maybe, Marie said diplomatically. Their social order has broken down. It takes a lot to maintain a society. I've been thinking about that. They're all sick, even the children. They have lots of chronic illnesses, and they have injuries that haven't healed well. There aren't enough children, and there probably aren't enough females. An imbalance in workers and majors. Cedar, you see how they behave. They're sick, and their population is skewed. But why? We can treat their symptoms, but we can't cure them if we don't know why. It might be environmental, like a toxin in the environment, or nutritional deficiencies. It might be an epidemic. Nye and I both counted more glassmakers last fall. They're dying. They need help. She was looking sicker, but seemed energetic. Steve Lind had told me the toxins in her blood acted as stimulants. There were a few more reports. Farmers were trying to help the crops recover, but some fields needed complete replanting. Hunters were too busy guarding the glassmakers to be able to do their jobs, so the cooks would be using dried meat or meat substitutes. No happy reports. Some of us stayed afterward for a lesson in making glassmaker sounds.
Whack! See! Chicka-chicka-ug!
But we were all tired and went home soon. As I walked through the city, Stevelin's leaves rustled in the wind over my head. Plants got tired, like me, and he was still negotiating with the other greenery to keep making stupefiers in more refined doses, and the plants he had to deal with weren't necessarily cooperative or smart. Imagine a plant like cedar. So the glassmakers were still prisoners, not symbionts, not partners, not domesticated, nothing close to that mutualism-friendly stuff. We needed to be patient, patient, patient. Damn, I'd be the queen of patience. Well, that was the situation on the fourth day of Operation Domesticate, a warm spring morning, tall storm clouds on the horizon, bats singing,
"Rain coming!"
overhead, the streets full of people starting their day or finishing their night. We didn't work that hard even during harvest. A few children marched down the street, firewood on their backs. They chattered like glassmakers.
"Kertle, kertle, kertle!"
Maybe it was a game to them, but they should have been in class learning multiplication, and when they delivered their wood, they'd have to go work in the fields while the adults kept an eye on our prisoners. I hustled to the bakery to help deliver bread. One way to domesticate an animal, Stevelin said, was to give it food, bread, stews, fruit, salads, soups, tea, roasts, whatever we had.
The bakery smelled of sweet smoke and bread, all wonderful. The three bakers were up to their elbows in dough. All the ovens were fired up. Sweat made Nye's shirt stick to his arms and back as he lifted stone baking trays of nut-studded bread for the glassmakers from the oven. I didn't know he had such muscles. Lifting, kneading, hauling bags of flour and grain, it all added up, I guess. The other two bakers had strong arms and shoulders, too, once I looked. Of course we'll run out of wheat, one of them said. She was shaping loaves from a wad of dough the size of a 4-year-old boy.
We'd have gotten a little low on wheat anyway, the senior baker called as he formed lentil turnovers.
Low? She said. We have a 10-month supply. At least we did before we had to feed more mouths.
5 days. 11 sacks of flour. Do the math. If this harvest doesn't come in, we're short.
Firewood, too, the woman said. We'll need extra firewood. The senior baker looked up, and his bald head wrinkled as he raised his eyebrows.
Maybe a couple of helping hands. It's one thing to work every day, but from Luxrise to Sunset, I'm too old for that.
An apprentice, the woman answered. How about that Jewel girl? She's old enough.
Jewel likes cooking, not baking, the man said. There's a difference.
Nye finally said something.
A worker. A glassmaker worker. They're smart. They're fast.
We all stared at him. He stacked nut loaves into a basket. They had been baked to perfection.
I thought you didn't like them, the head baker said.
What I like doesn't matter. It's what we need. We have to make them be a part of us. That means they have to do what we do. I'll work with them. I'll teach them. I'll eat with them. I'll talk with them. Because I have to.
No one said anything for a while. Then the senior baker said,
They already know how to bake. They make bread. It won't take much to get them used to this place.
Yeah, a glassmaker, the woman said. Well, that's mutualism, I said. You want firewood and a worker, and that's what you'll get. I flashed them a smile, especially at Nye. He helped me put loaves into a basket for the queens and children. I slipped through the front gate in the city wall. We kept it halfway closed, just in case. It felt good to be out, to be seeing the city's glazed brick wall and the rainbow bamboo rising tall inside it like a giant garden, and I understood why they wanted us out. It was a beautiful city. Across the river, the majors and workers stumbled around inside their corrals, fenced in by wide hedges of brambles and thorns. Guards, including Cedar, watched them, bows in hand, backed up by more guards on the far side of the river, and Flora talked with the guards, pointing out individuals to hobble. Kung walked out of the woods with a load of palm leaves, thatch for roofs.
Eagle feathers. I was going to have to award a boatload of eagle feathers when this was done. We needed to find a worker to become a baker's apprentice. How?
I tried not to look at the trampled children's garden and the muddy fields that used to sparkle with tulips. Steveland had said the plants would recover fast with our help and would be more loyal than ever since we'd proved that we cared about them, especially the pineapples. I sure hoped so. I felt really small when I looked at the fields and forest all around us. What if all the plants decided they didn't like us? They knew what to do. The queen's tent had mats on the ground and food. No clothes, no furniture, nothing extra, and it was going to rain and get cold soon. Would they want their blankets back? We'd explained in a letter that they had only to ask. It lay on the ground, as far as we knew, unread. But someone among the glassmakers could read and write. We knew that. All they had to do was communicate. Not even agree, just scribble a note. Just ask. Just call us idiots. Anything. Damn queens.
Chakoo, Bartholomew!
I screeched as I entered the tent.
That's a matter of opinion, he said.
He sat on a mat playing a game of Go with himself. The queens were talking to each other and didn't seem to look our way, even when I set the basket of bread in the center of the tent. The children ran up and took loaves as I stepped back.
I'm still ignored, like a piece of poop, he said.
Poop is a gift. Ask Steveland. You're a gift to the glassmakers. They just don't see it. A child grabbed the letter from the ground and looked ready to tear it up, a bored little kid looking for something to do. They were really cute, those kids, with soft curly fur and heads a bit oversized, just like human kids. Bellona screeched something. The kid put the letter down. A cat hopped over and turned a somersault. They liked the kids, too. The children and cat began playing Follow the Leader.
They don't want to admit we exist, Bartholomew said. But this morning, two of them got up and marched out of the tent toward the city gate. They wanted to go someplace, obviously. Fine. So I escorted them, and they went straight to the museum. They didn't pay attention during the first visit, or so we thought. But that was a false front, because they knew exactly what they wanted to look at this time. And it was the section about the abandonment of the city.
Hey, that's something.
She read the labels out loud, that one.
He pointed to a female with a row of curly black hair down her back, the one that had been most responsive to the mission last fall.
It's written in glassmade as well as pacifist, and they quarreled over something. Well, quarrel is too strong a word. They were upset over something. They had a discussion about something. They were deeply moved by something. You know the label that starts, Rainbow City was founded about 400 years ago by space travelers like us. They came right back and haven't stopped talking since. Listen.
They're interrupting each other.
As usual. It says in the museum that there were 1,000 glassmakers in the city. I believe that's what they're talking about. I've seen them counting on their fingers. They're planning something. That's what I conclude.
Bellona grabbed the letter and waved it around. Bartholomew and I exchanged glances. Nothing stupid, I hope, I said.
They're not stupid.
They kept talking with their impassive faces, squawky, shrieky voices, and the curly-backed one had a lot to say. I set down a few go-stones to complicate Bartholomew's game for him, and listened. Curls picked up a loaf of bread and slapped Bellona across the face with it. Then she yelled so loud my ears rang.
They like the food, Bartholomew said. Marie, good morning.
I turned, and there she was, hurrying to the tent. The morning wasn't cold, but she was bundled up in sweaters. She looked yellowish and exhausted. Good morning, Bartholomew. How are they eating?
They eat everything we give them.
He got up to give her a hug. Greenies do that. Even the stews and salads?
They love the stews.
Good. Steveland ran some tests overnight. They're all malnourished. Severely malnourished. Beyond the point of illness. They're crippled and stunted. It's... She shook her head. It explains a lot. I'll show you. The queens are as bad off as anyone, and they're the leaders, supposedly. They're in no condition to lead. The queens kept arguing and ignored us. Marie walked right among them and started pointing and talking, shouting to be heard. Look at their eyes! Look at the individual facets! Some sparkle, and some don't. This female, look, she's completely blind! It was gray eyes. That one? See that grayish area around the edges of her eyes? See how wide it is? I took a few steps closer and squinted. So she sees only with the center? That's not even half. Damn. I looked around. Curls had eyes that were almost all sparkly, and she was leading some sort of scheme. Yes, blindness, Marie said, but it's worse. Look, here, at the skin around her eyes and mouth. Gray eyes twitched under Marie's touch, like a bug had landed on her.
Those marks that look like wrinkles? They're actually sores or scars from sores. There are more, but you can't see them under the fur. Their teeth are in their throats, and in the ones I autopsied, the teeth were bad. These glassmakers aren't like the ones in the museum. I mean, they're the descendants, but their health, their proportions don't look right. There aren't enough old ones, and if no one lives to be old, they all die young of something. If you're malnourished, you're susceptible to all sorts of problems. She waved angrily toward the slit trench being used for a gift center. There's blood in some feces, and all sorts of parasites. A simple purgative would do them a lot of good. She dropped to her knees in front of a child, the same one that had been in a coma from the tranquilizers, and took it by the hands. Look at this child. The eyes are already going bad. The fur is thin. These claws are malformed. Tears sparkled in her eyes. The child shifted nervously. I felt like I ought to do something. These leg sores aren't healing, Marie said. Ulcerated sores on a child. She touched the joints, and it squealed. The queens had stopped talking, and curls came closer to watch her. Malformed joints. And I hate to think. Tears slid down her cheeks. What this means for mental development. It's hard to keep us well fed. It takes all our skills and a lot of help from Steveland. We're not made for this planet, but we can get what we need. She began to sob, too sick to stop herself. We can help them. We can make the glassmakers well. If they let us. I knelt down and put an arm around her. Those words hit me. If they let us. Why were we waiting for them? This was forced friendship. We decided what would happen. We'd make them accept help. We were the ones in charge, and the damn queens had to get used to the idea. The sooner, the better. Then I took a deep breath. Anger wouldn't help. Curls was saying something to Bartholomew. Communicating, even if we couldn't understand what she said. He got a slate and began writing. She be her sad, he read out loud, pointing to Marie. All you be you sick. He held it out to Curls, who studied it, following the lines of writing with a finger. She could read. He wrote some more. You need good food. We be us sad, because you be you sick. We give you good food. Curls read it, and turned back to the other ones and began yelling at them again. Bartholomew looked at me and winked. Do you want to talk? I shouted at her. If they liked to argue, I could too. I want to listen. Chakoo! Cock! She turned toward me. Bartholomew, tell her... No, make her come talk with me at the meeting house. One-on-one. I have things to say. Make her? I waved at the rainbow bamboo around us. It's time to get aggressively friendly. Right, Steveland? Her and me. No more damn games. We're going to become best friends. Starting now. Bartholomew glanced in Marie's direction. It's time to try something else, I suppose. Bring her. I was co-moderator. I could give orders. I helped Marie to her house to rest, which she didn't want to do, then went to see Steveland at the meeting house. Hey, water and sunshine, I'm going to force friendship. No more being nice. Warmth and food. Pause. You are a likable person, and this new tactic holds promise. But you will not like the promise I made. The door was open, so we weren't meeting in secret, but no one had come to the meeting house. Everyone had too much work to do. I'll always like you. I sat down. His cheerfulness was probably a front, like mine. I promised the orange trees that you will cut them down. What? Damn, I'll never understand plants. They do not wish to be cut down, but they do not wish to produce nutritious catkins for the glassmakers, who need ascorbic acid and thiamine with copper. I can transfer copper to the orange trees for this purpose. You can harvest at levels that will still permit pollination, but they refuse to fortify their catkins. The animal equivalent is a lion challenging the Fitmaster. Fitmaster Steveland? I meant that as a joke. He answered slowly. Perhaps I did not make a perfect analogy, although the image you invoked is humorous. Their behavior is perverse. Additional copper would allow enhanced production of cytochrome enzymes and plastocyanin in their chloroplasts. They would benefit from this activity. They refuse because oranges are naturally insubordinate. They routinely refuse to join us other plants in synchrony to share pollinators or maintain frugivores for seed dispersion, perhaps because they grow in shade and need not negotiate for canopy rights. But they are not unintelligent. They will see it is to their advantage to help us. I knew what a chloroplast was, at least. If we cut them down, we can't harvest anything. I suggest trimming one to ground level, which is close to barbarism, but necessary. And we must act quickly. Their catkins are budding now. If you trim the tree severely, it will suffer, not die, and the entire grove will be frightened. We do not have time to wait. The glassmakers have been sick for a long time, and if we can make them healthy, they will be more responsive. They will see that we mean them well, and that sharing lives with us is to the mutual benefit of everyone. We must appeal to the intelligence of the glassmakers. I have observed that intelligent creatures are easier to control because they can foresee the results of their actions farther ahead. Control? Tatiana had said he wanted too much control over us. Exactly. With very little effort, you humans and I were able to enter into mutualism, which involves mutual control. I am a social creature, so submitting to social control is a desirable thing. The glassmakers will submit, but we must act quickly. I am tired. I know you are. Marie's health is failing. You must cut down an orange tree this morning. The wood is very useful. I can direct a forester to the optimal tree to frighten the oranges. That didn't sound too scary, the mutual control part at least. Perhaps the forester can bring a lion, he said. Trees fear lions. Lions eat roots. The animal equivalent is someone attacking your face. Both you and the glassmakers are not native to Pax. For that reason, you do not thrive naturally. I have worked hard to keep you healthy, and without assistance, the glassmakers are failing. But when they lived here earlier, I was not capable of helping them as I have helped you. Malnutrition may have led to the city's demise if, as Marie speculates, it leads to social breakdown. I do not know. Ignorance is another kind of imbalance. I can make only general guesses about their needs, but we are learning many things quickly. It began to rain outside. I thought about shutting the door, but then we'd be alone. Good. The Queens, well, you saw, they're up to something. They realize the situation is completely unexpected. This may give us opportunities to communicate and create new balances. Bartholomew has persuaded a queen to come. I believe his shouting and anger was an act. Humans are exceptionally able at dissembling. Right. I can shout, too. You must balance her behavior. I believe this will be a pivotal moment. Correction. I hope it will be a pivotal moment. We would all benefit if the current stalemate is ended positively. Balance, balance, balance. I heard Bartholomew's voice. This is where we're going. Here. No, here. Chakoo, I said. The queen and a worker entered and stopped. Come in, I said, waving her over. Bartholomew shooed her from behind, holding a palm leaf umbrella, and she moved closer, the worker following. Even from across the room, I could see that the worker was sickly and a bit blind, now that Marie had taught me what to look for. Curls looked around. Bartholomew sat down at the table with a bit of show to demonstrate how we did things in the meeting house. She took a few steps closer.
She insisted on the worker. That's what took so long.
No problem. I picked up a slate and brush. We propose you friendship. We will talk us a future. I be me, Lucille. I wrote as phonetically as I could. And I be me, leader of city. I turned to Bartholomew. I wasn't good at writing. Is the grammar right? The imperative?
Almost.
He corrected a word. The queen leaned her head over to look. I remained sitting, eye level with her big body, within reach of her four-fingered, clawed hands. Well, I said to her, tell me what you think. I pushed writing materials toward her. She stared at them. She made a sound that seemed to be disagreement.
I stood up.
Hal, we can't wait forever, you and us. We have to get something going here. I gestured at the brush, slate, and inkpot again, and as queenly as I could, I said, write something, damn you. You're alone. You don't have to argue with the other queens. Just with me. She looked at the writing materials suspiciously. She picked up the brush like an unfamiliar tool, testing how to hold it in her four fingers, two of them small and opposed, two straight but jointed like human fingers. A stiff line of flesh, sort of like a fingernail, covered the backs of her fingers. The cuticles alongside them had pulled away in some places and had fresh scabs. She began to write slowly and formed the letters shakily, as if she'd never written much.
You steal us things.
Translation. We'd taken all their possessions. True. Write this, I told Bartholomew. He could write faster and better than me. We won't keep them. You know we want friendship, not fighting. We can share the city. She read the words and muttered something, then settled onto a bench, legs underneath her body, sitting. The worker sat on the floor next to her, very close.
You perhaps no need you, friend, she wrote.
I swear she wrote the word friend with disdain. Steveland answered, No, we have us no need. No need be it art. Our art be us befriend you. It was a play on words, since art and need were spelled almost the same. Bartholomew pointed at Steveland's stem. Curls looked and said something like, Eep! She nodded and swiveled her head, teeth ground in her throat. The worker wiggled closer to her. In Glassmaid, he continued, I be me Steveland. Your ancestors knew me. I be me pleased, perhaps, to address you. Translation, what's your name? She pointed to him and looked at me and started to say something, but stopped. I nodded. Steveland, I said, pointing. Lucille. Bartholomew. I pointed at her. She said something like, See you. That's what I repeated anyway.
You chose intelligence to share a city, Steveland wrote. You be you sick. Your sisters be them blind. Your children tremble of type of hunger. We will feed you. We will make you healthy.
She snorted. With her thin, scabby fingers, she dipped the brush in ink and began to write, maybe the word, we, but she crossed it out and wrote again, slowly, constructing the word with effort.
Slaves.
I took a brush and wrote, no, never slaves. But why? I looked at Bartholomew. Explain the law for her.
Our writings.
Bartholomew wrote in Glassmaid and read out loud in pacifist,
Order us to do equality. No slaves. Would you like to read our books?
He got up and grabbed the original copy of our constitution from a table where it stood framed under glass and set it in front of her.
I can translate for you.
She leaned forward to eye it. Nye entered carrying a tray. I wasn't expecting that. It was heaped with food.
Warmth and sunshine, Nye, Steveland said in Glassmaid. I ask Nye, bring us food.
"You return us weapons,"
she wrote, apparently ignoring Nye. I thought about how to explain, but Steveland beat me to it.
"Weapons, be they with equality. You will understand, because we also believe in caution, and you try to kill us."
"Us? You be you plant,"
she wrote, and said it aloud.